On Robinhood Radio, it's time for the Media Beat from David Tereshchuk, his weekly review of media coverage. David is a multimedia journalist with an online column at themediabeat.com and has reported since 2012 for the PBS network, mainly on ethical issues. He is also the author of a memoir, A Question of Paternity, Life as an Unaffiliated Reporter.
This is David Tereshchuk with the Media Beat for the weekend beginning January 17th, 2025. When the weekend's over, Monday follows, with our new and old president being sworn in for his second term. He'll get more than enough attention for that. I'm more interested right now in his aiders and abettors, who helped to ensure his return, especially the disproportionately influential ones who just happen to be controllers of vast communications empires. That group has included, for a long time now, Peter Thiel, one of the co-founders of PayPal, and currently the happy recipient of valuable national defense contracts in the realm of electronics and data analytics. He's been a libertarian kind of right-winger from the get-go, and a sizable financial contributor to Trump since at least 2016. But a rather less straightforward trajectory has been followed by the bigger slew of tech and comms business titans who flocked to Trump more recently. We need to know what they're getting, or hope to get, in return for their support. These more recent converts include those tagged in the tabloid press as tech bros, and maybe most prominent among them are Musk and Zuck. Of these two bros, Elon Musk has been both bouncier in his support and financially more enthusiastic. As the richest man in the world, by repute he could and did easily pour more than $250 million into boosting the MAGA campaign, and his other striking contribution, certainly memorable, was his jumping around like a preteen in the grip of a sugar rush when he shared a stage with his hero candidate Trump. By the way, it may be no accident that both Musk and Thiel were brought up in apartheid-era South Africa, the sons, both of them, of autocratic fathers, if we want also to be Freudian about it. And each father made his fortune out of extractive industries, diamonds and minerals. Policy analysts with a global outlook have often argued that the long and bitter war to defeat apartheid created among many in South Africa's white population deep nihilistic views of the world, seeing it as an all-against-all Darwinian fight for survival. Thiel's father, interestingly, played a significant role in exploiting uranium from neighboring Namibia in an effort to help South Africa become a nuclear power. In more modern times, Musk has been throwing his weight, the weight of his social media platform X, formerly Twitter, and a weighty portion, at least, of his money, behind extreme right-wing movements in Europe, not least the far-right Alternative for Germany. He's also supporting the UK movement that inaptly claims the name Reform and stands to the far right of Britain's Conservative opposition to the new Labour Party government. And just by the byway, another member of the so-called PayPal Mafia, a co-founder of that platform along with both Thiel and Musk, is the Silicon Valley investor David Sacks. Someone who went from saying Trump disqualified himself from office with his January 6th support for rioters to hosting a lavish fundraiser event for Trump at his house in Pack Heights, San Francisco. That local abbreviation doesn't stand for Political Action Campaign, though perhaps it now should. It's actually the elevated and very Tory Pacific Heights. More casually, San Franciscans call it just Billionaire's Row. David Sacks happens, maybe only by coincidence, to have spent his childhood in a white-gated community in South Africa's Cape Town, and he's now tapped by Trump to be the so-called artificial intelligence and crypto czar in the new White House. There are, in fact, 13 billionaires in Trump's lineup of administration nominees, according to many business reporters, And it's possible that as a crowd overall they may simply be settling into, and the younger, more tech-oriented, more politically freewheeling, are aging into the right-wingery that their vast riches are possibly bound to foster. It's certainly rare, though not unheard of, for anyone among the super-wealthy to oppose, for instance, huge tax cuts of the kind Trump has been offering. Once upon a time, though, the more circumspect among this crowd would not have touched Trump with the proverbial 10-foot pole. Circumspect is probably not the right word for Mark Zuckerberg, but a, let's say, very nervous Zuck did once throw Trump off of his Facebook and Instagram properties. That was in the wake of the defeated president's behavior around that January 6th insurrection. The bans lasted for about 2 years. Now, with Trump reinstalled on those and other social networks, Zuck has dined obsequiously at Mar-a-Lago and contributed $1 million to Trump's inaugural celebration costs. Not that this counts as remarkable among the billionaire class. Far more significantly for our communications landscape, I'd say, he's abandoned Facebook's fact-checking program for its 200 million American users, directly associating that decision of his to Trump's election victory, which he called, quote, a cultural tipping point, into a culture, it seems, that Zuck wants to be fully part of. I asked earlier what the tech bros might be getting out of their lemming-like rush to support an unpredictable president. Well, one specific outcome that Zuck certainly has his eye on is that of a trial that's scheduled for mid-April. Judge Jeb Boasberg will preside over it in the Federal District Court for the nation's capital. During Joe Biden's term in office, the Federal Trade Commission sued Zuck's overarching corporation Meta for acting illegally back in the 20-teens when it purchased, allegedly for way over a realistic market price, those other entities, Instagram and WhatsApp, in an effort to maintain monopoly control over the social media market. The chair of the FTC, Lina Khan, has been a thorn in big tech's side since President Biden appointed her, and by the time the case comes to trial, she will have had to make way for Trump's placeman as chair, Andrew Ferguson, who's already a trade commissioner and is described in the financial press, at least, as the polar opposite of Khan. The departing chair has told journalists she expects the commission will vigorously continue to press its case against Meta, and there's another case, too, against Jeff Bezos and Amazon. I did say she's been a thorn, didn't I? But Khan has also acknowledged in an interview with the business news network CNBC that there is a danger of, quote, a sweetheart deal being struck between Zuck and her Trump-supporting successor at the FTC. As a final note, and far from unconnected to what I've been highlighting, I have to bid a sad farewell this week to a distinguished columnist for the Washington Post over the past 14 years, Jennifer Rubin. She's distinguished in the literal meaning of that word, as well as its loose sense of being well respected. She distinguishes herself, stands out from the crowd, in being generally far more conservative than her fellow post-opinion writers. Though I should note she stopped calling herself a conservative in 2020 and gave vocal support to Biden. For one salient reason, Trump and his conservative followers. Rubin and I have only rarely ever been of the same outlook on any other issue, but she's always been able to help me view matters from a different, often iconoclastic angle. Her departure follows the equally disturbing loss at the Post last week of its Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial cartoonist Ann Telness. She resigned over her anti-Jeff Bezos cartoon. Oh, and anti-ABC and Disney as well. It was funny, I'd say, but rejected by editors for its sharp lampooning of corporate donors to Trump's inaugural festivities. Her targets were very clearly identified, Bezos as owner of the Post itself, of course, and the Disney Corporation, owner of ABC News, which spinelessly settled a defamation case with Trump. Columnist Rubin made it very evident that she stood in the same public forum of free speech as cartoonist Telnes. Rubin said her paper's owner and, quote, his cronies, including Zuckerberg in that number, have been accommodating and enabling, quote, the most acute threat to American democracy, which is how she plain-spokenly labeled Donald J. Trump. I'll miss both her and Telnes at the Post, but I look forward to seeing them both regularly at the subscription platform Substack, where Rubin's contribution is entitled, rather fittingly, The Contrarian. That's all from the Media Beat this week. If you have been, thanks for listening.
Thank you very much, David. We will talk to you next week. David can be found at themediabeat.com.